Vitality to you, your colon, and the planet. I'm your co-host, Scott Patton, along with the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today?
Oh, that was a beautifully pregnant pause you used to announce me, I tell you. I feel so honored when it's like a drum roll and shuffle and shimmy, and then here's Martin.
Here's Martin.
So anyway, I'm at it, as usually.
Yeah,
as
and
usual.
You've had some bad news in your family, I understand.
Well, yeah, I think my wife would be feeling, what's the word? She feels private about her affairs and the affairs of her family, but yes, to be told, her mom is awaiting a procedure that deals with her colon. She's not well. We can probably get into the gory details, but perhaps not. Anyway, the issue has been that that she was bleeding, and not just a little bit, you know, like little bit of blood, a whole bunch of blood. Right?
Wow. So, like most issues when it comes to the body, one that nobody wants to talk about until it's like late is. Problems with the bowel and the colon and all that sort of good
stuff.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, how's your poop today, my son?
Yeah, like, well,
good,
you know,
Dad. Good.
Martin, when I was in my 20s, I went to Australia, and then I ended up traveling home overland through Southeast Asia, India, and Nepal, and this was like the mid-70s, late 70s, so it wasn't, you know, some people may say it's rough now, but I mean, it was really rough then. And one of the things I did, and I don't think I thought of it myself, but I just don't recall anyone actually telling me, was I always checked my bowel movements to see how I was doing. And if it was nicely formed, I was okay, I'm doing good. If it was like diarrhea, I was like, oh, I got to be careful. And you know, and I don't know that anybody does, you know, I still do it. It's a habit of mine. Just check and, oh, yeah, good. But I don't know. It's not polite conversation, right?
Well, I want to tell you something. You know, I grew up in the Czech Republic. I come from a different culture. The most common model of a toilet back in the Czech Republic and also in Germany, still more than 50% of toilets that are sold there are designed differently. They're designed in such a way that the poop actually stays on a platform. So presented to sort of on a platter, and then when you flush it, that's only when it disappears. But until you flush it, it actually sits out in the open, stinking up the entire bathroom for you to very much look at.
Wow.
So it's of course very easy to scoop if you want to take it, but it's also very easy to admire or be horrified by, because it's right there. So the culture there is very different. I mean, people really take this as a basic, daily routine to examine what's coming out.
Yeah, and that's a good way of judging how we're doing as far as our general health is concerned, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So what are the things that we can do to, you know, make sure that we've got a healthy bowel and a healthy colon?
Oh, yeah. Well, the first thing that really regulates this issue is the amount of fiber. The way I understand it is that our ancestors, and by that I mean 10,000 years ago or more, used to ingest something like 150 grams of fiber a day.
Wow.
But today's American is lucky to get 15 to 20, and the recommended healthy amount is 30.
Holy smokes.
So the old grandpa, the Stone Age grandpa, would eat five times as much. And also he would poop three massive poops every day. Massive, like, you know, 2 and 3 footers.
Wow.
So that's allegedly what the original design was. So these days, you know, when somebody says everything's regular, I poop every day, that's not necessarily good. And of course, if somebody tells you, well, I poop these little dried out pellets every 3 or 4 days, that really isn't good at all.
Just to kind of put some numbers behind this, one surgeon, Dr. Harvey Kellogg, said of the 22,000 operations that I have personally performed, I have never found a single normal colon. And of the 100,000 that were performed under my jurisdiction, not over 6% were normal. He said he knew of many cases in which operations were prevented by cleansing and revitalizing the bowel. He maintained that 90% of the diseases of civilization are due to improper functioning of the colon. So
yes.
We're talking about an important aspect of living a healthy, vital life.
Mm-hmm. I remember, the first book that got me into this health and wellness business was a book written by Bernard Jensen. I don't recall the title exactly, but it has to do achieve health or attain health through colon management, or bowel and colon management. And indeed, it's when you control the output, that's when then you have control of your health. I remember the all the body parts were in a meeting, and they started arguing over who was the most important. And sure enough, the brain said, I'm the most important.
Yeah, I'm smart.
Oh, yeah, I control everything. Liver said, no, I'm the most important. I cleanse and produce the energy and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, everybody's just... Well, anyway, the anus was sitting sort of off to the side and nobody paying much attention to him. And he finally said, I'm the most important. And they all laughed. And, yeah. Anyway, he got upset, shut down, and that was that. Six days later, they had another meeting. They all voted, and anus was voted the most important part of the body.
That's a great story.
Uh-huh. So what do we do? Okay, fiber to move things, lecithin to emulsify and smooth things along, especially, if they're painful. Lots of fluids. If you don't have enough water, your body will pull water. I mean, the food we eat in the stomach, it's quite mushy and wet. And as it goes through the small intestine to the large intestine, in the last segment of it, that's where the body will extract water. And it's not just to make it more thick. It's actually to retain water that the body needs to function. So if you're not drinking enough, you will be causing the body to drink the water from your poop. Now, really, try and connect to it visually and physically. Okay. If I don't drink enough water from the top through my mouth, my body's going to have to drink the water from my poop.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, to set the record straight, Martin, how much water should we be drinking in a day?
Well, I guess enough to keep the poop nice and moist and wet, huh?
Okay.
It varies. I mean, if you're going to go to a hot yoga, you're going to need to have 1.5 liters, 2 quarts perhaps, of water just to replenish what you're going to get rid of through your skin.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to work out at the beach, you're going to easily lose a quart or two in the afternoon. So you have to replace that. So all people who are working physically or perspiring every day, they need to have a much greater water input than folks that are just, suit and tie, air-conditioned, no big deal.
Right.
And of course, the more acidic or the more poisoned the food you ingest, the more you need to dilute it with water.
Right. Well, one of the things that Dr. V.E. Irons, who's a pioneer in colon cleansing therapy, said was that 99% of all ages and sexes have violated two of the major natural laws from 1 to 2 to 3 times every day since they were 2 years old. And these two laws were, one, the wrong combination of food, and you've mentioned that on previous shows, and two, the constant daily use of tremendous amounts of dead foods.
Yes. Oy, yes, of course, we've been talking about that. Anything you cook is, you know, the enzymes are killed off on it.
Yeah.
If it comes with in a box with a label on it, I guess no, this is not true anymore. Because just recently I bought a beautiful salad greens in a plastic box with a label on it. So, okay, anything in the grocery store that's not on the perimeter, you know, all the stuff in the middle, that's usually concentrated foods.
And not that good.
Well, they're dead, therefore you need to compensate for them by adding the enzymes back in. For every cup of coffee you drink, you need to drink 4 to 5 times its volume in water in order to just get rid of what you just put in.
Right. And so, yeah, so when we look at... I'm curious, like, what about something like rice?
Well, it's concentrated food. It's pure energy. It's pure carbohydrate. The only thing it contributes to is your sense of oral satisfaction. I mean, there's no... You know, in a human body, there is absolutely no requirement for carbohydrates as such. There's a requirement for fats, for proteins, for minerals, and all of the minor cofactors like trace minerals and vitamins and the likes. But there is a zero, goose egg zero, requirement for carbohydrates. And by that, I mean sugar, flour, starch, you know, you mentioned rice. So when you eat that, the only thing you contribute to is your energy available to burn. So if you are working physically and need it for the physical output, then it's a great thing because it helps you maintain the activity level. If this means that you're eating more than you need to, you're going to look like a sumo wrestler soon. Because that's what they do. Sumo wrestlers eat a huge amount of rice and then go to sleep. That's how they put on weight. They're force feeding themselves to grow big. So what did you want to make for a point with rice?
Well, I was just, you were thinking of everything on the outside, and I was just thinking of all the people in China and Japan and everything who eat rice as a staple of their dinners. So I was just thinking, normally we think of rice as, I think of rice as not necessarily a bad choice, but that's not now necessarily the case, right?
Well, it's not a bad choice for energy. But, you know, a typical Chinese farmer would be eating bok choy and who knows what else, other greens, mm-hmm. from his wok with a bowl of rice. The rice for energy and the greens and all the other things for nourishment, you know, the concentrated green nourishment. I mean, we keep talking about high nutrient density, things yes. like chlorella, spirulina, you know, alfalfa. Well, in the Chinese farm format, it'll be the grasses and all of the stuff that he grew in the field. I mean, those poor people, you know, the healthiest people in China have been the farmers living in the really poor countryside.
Right.
And, you know, they would possibly kill a chicken maybe once a week. Once every 2 weeks.
Well, and it would certainly last for a week or 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, they would probably chop it up. They would use all the bits and pieces, right? They would make the stock out of the hard-to-look-at parts.
Yeah. Well, and they love chicken feet, so...
I mean, yeah, there you go. I don't know. That's one thing I haven't eaten. I remember my mother cooking the chicken feet in the soup when I was a kid. But
I don't remember eating it. But I just can't. They people that do eat it that I know love it, think it's great.
Yeah, sorry, it's a delicacy I have not learned to love.
Right. So another aspect of the gut is candida. So if our colon and our is not healthy and everything else, we can get the wrong bacteria in there. We can get it hardening against the sides, or so we're now not even absorbing much, all that sort of good stuff. But the other thing that happens is you can have candida, which is yeast.
Which is nasty, which is yeast. Now, so yeast, of course, is fed by carbohydrates.
So that means, and it's weird, right? Like it's almost like what I've heard, so I just want to set this out and then you can set the record straight, let's say, for example, I've got candida, I've got this yeast, it needs sugars, right?
Yes.
So I'm walking along, you know, I'm thinking I'm fine and everything else, and all of a sudden I have this craving for sugar. And it's not, I'm beginning to think if that craving isn't actually my craving, it's the yeast saying, hey, we need some sugar in here. And so I go and I get a Kit Kat bar and I scoff it down and I'm fine until the candida says... So I'm beginning to feel like a puppet with strings with the candida and the yeast saying, okay, Scott, fill yourself full of more sugar because we need it. We don't want to die off. And then we grow and there's more and more of us and it just becomes a vicious downward spiral.
Yeah, Scott, I can't fix that statement. It is already perfect.
So I've got the concept right then.
Absolutely. The whole idea is this. Yeast is the same, I mean, it's not identical, but it's the same type of a creature that you use to make wine or alcohol.
Mm. Or bread.
So, or bread. Well, yeah. Bread, well, you use it to raise, to make it rise.
Right.
But the great example is the alcohol. Because when you take grapes, or you take apples, or you take, you know, from grapes you make brandy, from wheat you make whiskey, from barley you make malt for beer, from potatoes you make vodka, from apples you make Calvados, from oranges you make Grand Marnier.
I didn't know all this stuff. This is amazing.
Every booze that you have on the shelves is started as a fruit or a grain.
Well, I knew about the hops and stuff, but
well, hops, that's for flavoring. Hops is flavoring,
oh,
but
okay.
It's the grain, which is
the barley
from which you make the malt. And actually, I've just recently heard that some beer like Budweiser is actually made from rice to make it light.
Mm.
So okay. they make it sort of from a cheaper grain, not as intense, so it doesn't have that strong, hefty European feel to it. It's got that light, 67 calories light, you know. We can brag about the beer that it's almost as good as water. Anyway, so the point is that when you get the carbohydrates in, the yeast sets up on it, and in absence of oxygen, it starts producing alcohol. And that's what really happens. You are actually feeling this sort of bad head. You can't think, you have brain fog, you can't recall things, you feel tired, you stumble around. I mean, it's quite the story what happens
wow.
in your body when you feed your yeast. It actually makes booze and makes you drunk.
Wow. Cool.
Anyway, so the yeast is in the body for a good reason. It is there to get rid of the excess carbohydrate. So you called it correctly, a vicious circle. The more carbohydrate you have, the more the yeast grows, and it grows because there's excess carbohydrate that has not been used in labor as fuel.
Right.
Right? I mean, if I were an Italian farmer, working in the field or working in the bush, it would behoove me to eat a pizza because I need to eat something like 4,000 calories in a day because I'm going to put them out tomorrow.
Right.
I was reading that the Tour de France bicyclists are going through something like 6,000 or so calories per day.
So, but so, that's not you and I.
No, that's not. You and I are 2 to 2.5 thousand. That's your typical North American male.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're seriously athletic, yeah, you're going to push it into the 6,000. If you're mildly athletic, you put it into the 4,000. And if you're, well, whatever. I mean, you draw your own conclusions.
Right.
I remember when I was 25, I held this job in a sawmill. Back then, it was before all the automation came in. I was working at the green chain. I mean, it was serious lifting and moving and, I mean, muscle action all day long, all 8 hours. And I had the body build to prove it.
Yeah.
And I had no difficulty putting away a 12-ounce steak and two potatoes. And I remember drinking two beer and not even feeling it.
Well, that would explain why when we were younger, we'd have a couple beer and probably not even think about it. And today, you know, when I'm not quite so young as I used to be, I have one beer and it feels like I had three or four when I was in my 20s.
And I reckon that has something to do with your general metabolism and how it's running.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been choking.
But also, I was way more active running around when I was in my 20s than I am today.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm sort of thinking is this the governor, or I don't know what we call that, adjustment on the base rate of burning was dialed quite a ways higher then than what it is now.
Yeah.
Well, so that's about the calories. So the candida, you know, the primary cause for the balance of the intestinal culture is usually triggered by antibiotics because they wipe out all of the creatures in your gut, and so the undesirables are stronger and more resilient in about the same way as weeds are more resilient than flowers. You know, it's like when you look at an abandoned house lot, it doesn't get overgrown in forget-me-nots and daisies.
Right.
It just gets run over by weed.
Yeah, dandelions. So,
yeah, dandelions and what are they called? Thistles and brambles and I don't know, all the different things.
So basically, if we had someone who is really healthy, everything was just absolute top notch, they've got all this good bacteria in their stomach, in their gut, in their colon, in their bowels, and then what happens is, oh, I've got some sniffles, so I go to the doctor, he gives me a bunch of antibiotics to kill the cold, instead of just letting the body look after it the way it's supposed to. And then it doesn't just kill the cold, it kills all that good flora and bacteria that's in all the different parts of our body. And then it's like nature abhors a vacuum, so all of a sudden there's no good bacteria, and all the weedy type bacteria just jump in to take its place.
That's the story. And then, of course, the other culprit is chlorine. You know, we put chlorine in our water. Why?
Kill stuff.
Bacteria. Kill bacteria. That's right.
It does a good job.
It does a perfect job. In fact, it makes the water safe. Well, when you drink that water, still with the chlorine in it, rather than filtered out,
it does the same
what
thing
does
to
it
us.
Do in your gut?
Yeah.
Yeah, kill the bacteria.
Yeah. So it kills all bacteria indiscriminately.
Of course.
But,
so when Scott, think of this. When we tell our children in the kindergarten and elementary schools that they are okay drinking the water from the water fountain in the school,
yeah,
what have we just done to them?
We've just wiped out all their bacteria.
That's right. I mean, is that crazy or just frickin' crazy?
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so this is what starts it off. It's a miracle that we're not sicker. Well, mind you, it's really increasing. I mean, the pace of illness is advancing pretty badly, I think. I think the generation that's in their 20s now is looking at way more problems way sooner than the generation that's in their 50s.
Well, I've heard that this generation right now that's growing up will be the first one not to live as long as it's, or longer than its parents. In a long time.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, my father. Yeah, that's true, but that's what I've heard.
Yeah, my father didn't live as long as his father. Okay.
Well, my dad's still alive, so I don't know if he's going to live as long as. But his dad lived to 103.
Okay. And how old is your dad now?
He's getting close to 80.
Okay. Well, we have 20 years to find out.
We have 20 years to find out. Okay, so what we've done is we have killed all the good bacteria, we've let the weeds grow, and we've eaten poorly. So obviously one of the things I love that you say is stop digging a deeper hole. So we're going to eat more raw food, we're going to eat more fibrous food, we're going to drink more water. Okay, so now I'm not eating, and we're going to combine the food a little bit better than we did before. Mm-hmm. So that's good, but how do we get the good bacteria in and the bad bacteria out?
Well, one of the sure ways to restore it is to get on a probiotic. But it's not just a probiotic. You see, probiotic is that's the bacteria, like lactobacilli and related creatures. But you need to they don't eat human food. They eat bacteria food. So you need to give them prebiotics. And a prebiotic is something like a fructooligosaccharide, which is essentially the sweet fiber from fruits and things like that. So if you decide that you're going to go, oh, I'm going to buy myself a probiotic, or I'm going to eat myself some yogurt, that's not good enough. You need to have that coupled with a prebiotic. And even that is not good enough, because you need to have that coupled with the supporting team, which is the soil-based organisms. You know, when you ate a carrot in 1840, you would go into the garden and you would pull the carrot out and you would swish it in a bucket of rainwater and you would start eating. Well, at that point, there still was quite a bit of soil-based life on the surface of the carrot.
Right, I remember doing that, pulling it out. It didn't matter how you washed it, there was always little black spots.
Yeah, there are black spots,
being dirt.
Yeah, oh yes, of course. And it's okay, we're built that way. You know, we're not supposed to have a sterile gut.
Right, well, we've got all this good bacteria that obviously is not sterile. Yeah.
Think of a hog, okay? It's the animal that's got its metabolism closest to a human. In fact, medical scientists are willing to transplant pig heart and pig liver into a human.
Wow.
And successfully. Okay? I mean, they're that close. Now, visualize dog as he harvests the,
They like truffles.
Yeah, well, he loves truffles, yes, so do I. But it's stuff that they find in the roots, right? Like, I mean, they use their snouts to dig around.
Yeah, they're right in the dirt.
Right. They don't rush off to the creek to wash it before they crunch it.
I can't say I've noticed that when I've been on the farm.
Right. So anyway, the point is that their metabolism is really close to human, and they do okay with a little bit of dirt. So
they should be okay with a little bit of dirt.
And they are, and we actually require it. So, you know, the package of carrots that you have bought in the grocery store that looks so pristine and clean, there's not a speck of dirt on the carrots.
Yeah, yeah.
It has been washed and soaked in chlorinated water, so there's nothing living on the surface of it.
Right.
Okay. Well, what are you going to compensate it with? You need to have some soil-based organisms. The other things are fermented or fermenting bacteria. You know, things that you would find in a yogurt, in a kefir, or kefir, people pronounce it, in kombucha, and other things of that sort. So that should be in your formulation as well. There should be fiber in it. There should be some herbs that are going to help move things along, a bit of stimulation, a bit of soothing, something to tell your liver to move things along, something to tell your kidneys to be happy and keep the elimination going.
So why should we be concerned about our liver and our kidneys?
Well,
are different. They're not really connected to our colon and our food and everything going through, are they?
Well, so the first thing that happens with the food after it has been disassembled in the small intestine, it goes through the brush border barrier of the villi, and it hits the bloodstream. There's this major blood vessel that goes from your small intestine straight into the liver. It's called the vena cava. Okay? It's a major highway, like 8 lanes of traffic, straight. First stop, liver.
Oh. So it gets broken down, goes into the bloodstream, goes into the liver.
And liver filters, sorts, and converts from the individual body parts. You know, like if it's carbohydrates, it should get converted into glycogen, which is the human form of sugar, glucose, and then it should be sent around. Your brain loves that. Your brain runs on sugar, but so does cancer and so does candida. So too much sugar and you're giving cancer the power. Anyway, it's all complicated. Or simple, if you wish. Simple means eat high nutrient density, low calorie density food, well watered, not poisoned, with all the nutrients that are required. So anyway, I was pretty much giving you a recipe for Exula Strata Flora when I described that product that you should have, which, of course, is the part. I mean, there's some Strata Flora in every Exula superfood. And then, of course, it's available in a bottle just by itself for people who are in serious trouble.
So, okay, well, I think it's safe to assume that everybody is in serious trouble. And so if you were to say optimally, how much, because I'm familiar with Strata Flora, it comes in a jar, you keep it in the freezer, it's powdered, I mix it in with water or cereal and take it that way. How often should someone take it, or how much should someone take in terms, we're just saying, hey, I've got the typical North American bowel and I need help here.
Okay, if you're living a healthy life, you should still do one bottle a year. You know, like once a year, maybe in the springtime or maybe in the fall, whatever, probably springtime, do a bottle of Strata Flora. And if you haven't had a bottle of it this year, you can start tomorrow.
And so that bottle will last a month?
Or two or three, depending on the dosage. The dosage is quite broad. There are 135 teaspoons in the bottle, and the daily dosage is anywhere from 1/4 to 5 teaspoons. So
and
it could
so
be.
How could I decide whether I should take a quarter or whether I should take 5?
Well, if you have a diarrhea, you would probably start with 1/4 teaspoon in every meal, because when you take it with meals, it'll slow things down. And if the quarter didn't do it, then halves and so on until you find the balance. So it's going to be somewhere between 1 teaspoon and 3 teaspoons a day.
Okay.
Taken with meals, and it'll regulate things from too runny towards normal.
So if I decide to take, this is to me is just all, really fascinating, Martin, and I just want to get clear, is because most of us will get it and we'll like, now what, right? So if I took, say, 5 tablespoons a day, would I notice like I'm getting stopped up or something and I should back off, or is there any sort of physical thing that my hair will grow?
No, this is all in the bowel. This is all in the bowel. If your stool is too runny, you take it with meals and it'll help slow it down.
Okay. If it's looking kind of normal?
If it's constipated, if it's not 2 or 3 bowel movements every day of reasonably moist, I don't know, formed but runny.
Right.
It should be softer than a wiener.
Okay. Yeah, so in other words, you're not in pain as it's coming out.
Oh, definitely not that. Yeah, if it's coming out as hard pellets that you have to strain to get out, you're dehydrated.
Yeah, okay.
So drink more, and you can take Strata Flora after your last meal of the day. And, 15 to 30 minutes after.
So
just to put it at the tail end of the digestive process for the day. And it gives it the most uninterrupted time to work.
So what you're saying is if you put it on later in the day, in the evening, after you've finished eating, then all that bacteria can get in your system and start working for almost 8 or 10 hours without being interrupted by a bunch of stuff.
Yes, exactly.
It totally makes sense.
And if you're becoming constipated from that, you definitely need to drink much more water. So anyway, that's end of the day dosage will again vary from half a teaspoon to 5 teaspoons. I've had people who called in and said, boy, am I glad that I read the label. Quarter teaspoon is all it took. It was massive and it all came out. Thank you guys. What a product. This is 1 year's supply for $100. I can't believe it.
That's great. I've had another, tell me,
that they took 5 teaspoons. And I said, this is getting spendy. And the lady said, you have no idea how that doesn't matter. I've had 25 years of unsatisfactory bowel movements, and I am enjoying myself. This is great. So anyway, yes, there you have it. I think we should break the program about here. Have yourself a nice poop. On the house, come to www.life-enthusiast.com. Look up Strata Flora. And if you can't find it, call 1-866-543-3388. We'll be able to give you some guidance. So thank you, folks, for listening. This is Martin and Scott, the Life Enthusiast Co-op, restoring vitality to you and to the planet.